Hello, welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How is the Caramel Kid?
What? Caramel's good. Sean, White Devil, what you saying?
I'm saying I'm happy. I'm sitting in my bedroom. My baby's asleep next door. I've got a pair of shorts on. I've just been doing some press ups. I'm looking good.
What?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You're trying to warm up for the summer.
Yeah, I'm checking out my veins. Yeah, getting the strength and conditioning going down. Yeah, which is good. I got the Swiss ball out a minute ago. Did some rolling around, which is fun.
So basically, it's a flat chest and belly with nipple hairs poking out. That's all I can imagine right now.
Yeah. Yeah, worse than that. Yeah, it's not a good look. Yeah, I can never screw up too well, Jermaine. But hey, yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying to get nice and lean and strong for the old mountain running.
Toned,
exactly. Yeah, I'm living in Amsterdam. If you're new to this podcast, I am. Me and Jermaine are both ex-runners. I'm still going. Jermaine's decided to sack it off, but he's also the fastest bus driver in London. But at the moment, I am trying to take on a challenge, which is try and become a competitive mountain runner while living in the world's flattest city. I've made that up. It might not be the world's flattest city, but it's
you
close.
You should check Guinness Book of Records for that.
I should. Yeah, I just made it up. But anyway, I'm in Amsterdam.
You could be next to the man that recently he was trying to get the record for sitting on a toilet the longest, wasn't he?
Really? What was that?
It's in the metro today. This man was trying to get Guinness Book of Records for sitting on the toilet the longest.
And did he get it?
I don't know, because obviously they edited his shop and he's just sitting there. And obviously people, you know what tourists are like, they were coming up taking photos and stuff.
Oh, Jesus.
He had his shorts on, but he just had to sit on the toilet.
Anything for fame. Anything. We're living in the Love Island generation. People do anything for fame.
Let's not go Love Island.
No, I hate that stuff. Anyway. So anyway, we'll talk a bit about my mountain running. I haven't done as much because I've been a bit ill this week, but I've got a couple of big races coming up. Over in the Alps. But how have you been? How's work been? How's the buses?
Work, crazy. So the story I got is bad and funny.
Yeah.
So obviously it can take it both ways.
Yeah.
But so I'm going around Russell Square, and for most people, a square in London is obviously a large bit of grass or concrete next to a main road.
Yeah.
And we're going around it, and there's a bus in front. We're going reasonably slow, but it's quite clear. And two traffic wardens want to cross the road.
Yeah.
So they cross in between the buses.
Yeah, okay.
You know, remember I was saying people walk in between the buses because they think, oh, the bus man will stop. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they walk out, and then oncoming traffic is clear. Yeah. So the as they're walking out, there was a parked taxi on the other side, and he obviously looked down the road. It's clear for him. And he's coming towards us, and obviously the people are going in between the bus.
Yeah.
And he speeds out the parking and just speeds, right?
No.
So the traffic warden steps out in front of the bus, thinking the road's empty because obviously he looked before he, you know, like went in between the buses.
Yeah.
Taxi man sped out. Warden's literally, he's broke really hard, and the traffic warden's fallen over.
Oh, no.
So he didn't get hit. But it looked like he got hit.
Ah, Jesus. Because
the taxi man sped out and broke.
Yeah, yeah.
And the traffic warden just jumped.
Yeah.
So it looks like he's got smacked. And the traffic warden just jumped down the road and fallen on the floor.
Yeah.
So I was laughing because obviously I knew he didn't get hit. And I was thinking, what's he doing?
Yeah.
And I was thinking, it's only a traffic warden. No one likes traffic warden.
No, and also traffic warden's... they're the kind of guys that's going to dive at football, aren't they? Traffic warden. You know what I mean? So he's taking a dive. He was play acting.
But it was potentially dangerous.
Yeah, you know. So you can't laugh.
Cabman got out to see if he was all right. And obviously he was in shock. But I was thinking, that's what you get. One for stepping in between buses.
Two for being a traffic warden.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad he's not dead. I'm glad he's all right, but we should have gone down.
That's the good thing, he was alive, but obviously it was funny that he just literally just dived on the floor like a madman.
Yeah. We've got a theme back because we've been a couple of weeks now, we haven't really had a theme to the show because we've been doing news and stuff and what's going on, but we've changed a little bit. We're going to go back to our old way of talking about topics because we've got some interviews today with Thriver. So Thriver are a health tracking company. So I've used the service. They basically, you get sent a small blood test kit. You could do it at home. you pick fingerprint your test, your finger, and you get your various blood test results back. And then you can improve and map your health over a series of months. So we'll talk more about it. I don't want to go into too much detail about Thriver, but we'll talk more about it.
You've done it, though, because obviously last time you ate some food and you have to not eat food like 4 hours before or something.
Yeah, I messed that all up. So I've done it. I can't talk about the results just yet, so they're just coming back. So
autopsy.
I'll tell you a bit about them as they go on. But we thought, because we're talking about him...
Sean's blood doping. Sean's blood doping.
Yeah. The levels of EPO were high, so I've got to wait till that comes back. But the reason why we what was interesting about it, he's talking about data. So the kind of data people like within the NHS, you basically go to the NHS, you go for ailments. You don't have any knowledge of what's really going on in your body. So he wanted to try and build a company where you can monitor the data of things that are going on with your body. That's the simplest way I can put it. Does that make sense? So we thought a little bit about what we thought would be interesting for us to talk about is what sort of a data is important to you as runners and as coaches. What data is important and why? What for you, Jermaine? Like, why? What kind of data did when you were running? What data did you record?
Well, raw data would be if I'm doing track sessions, you want to know splits.
Yeah.
And then
how far would you go? That you wouldn't bother with. You'd look at a 200, wouldn't you, or a 400, but you wouldn't write that stuff down.
It's usually 400. You sort of just keep a mental, mental data.
Yeah. Okay. In the mental data map.
Good sessions you would like write down. Obviously, if you write them down, which I found,
yeah,
a couple of weeks later when you forgot about them, if you look back, you actually give yourself a mental boost because you can see all the good sessions you've been doing.
So what would you do? Just raw numbers? You just put like K in 250 or whatever.
I usually put average.
Okay,
and then maybe put the fastest one. But I usually put average because when you put average, you sort of con yourself a bit because you might have run quicker, but if you've done a slow one, your average is down.
Yeah, okay. All right.
So when you look back, you think, okay, so next time I go to do it, I can always beat it.
Yeah, okay.
But if I'm running on the road, I use time markers, but people use their watch now. But if you're doing a run, those people do heart rates, so they're not, then they're in certain heart rate zones.
Yeah, okay.
That sort of data. But from coaching point of view, when I asked my coach, he said they do session data.
Right.
So they would do, classic is 10 times 400.
Yeah.
And then the athlete would do it. And then they would try and get the athlete to do it maybe a month later.
Yeah.
Or if they're in good shape, do it 2 or 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
And then they can see they've improved because they've done the exact same session.
Yeah.
And then later on, they've done the exact same session and they've improved.
Lo and behold. But when you were doing a diary, right, what would you write stuff about how you, like, subjective data? So would you like, I felt a bit crap going into this session, but I...
Well, when I was on funding, they gave us some stupid diary where you had to write down the weather conditions and all this stuff, which did make sense because if you go out and do a tempo and the weather was crap or you're doing a hard session, the weather's crap, it makes a difference.
Yeah, massive difference, yeah.
But the way I see it is like you just put down the time as what it was. It was just tough. So the next time when you do it, you're going to beat it because the weather's going to be good.
Yeah. So you wouldn't personally bother with all that stuff, subjective stuff?
The weather and things like that was obviously just getting too extreme, and obviously it was just taking the fun out of running. Because if you put too much stuff, like the data, sometimes the data just bogs you down.
Yeah.
And you do too much thinking. Like when I was in Africa, they said Europeans are too smart. They said they think about too much stuff when all they should be doing is, like the Africans, all they do is just run.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So sometimes you overthink it when you think if you just be running, obviously you could just be running just as fast because you're not thinking about, oh, I need to slow down.
Yeah, okay. And there is, like, these days, a lot of people, you know, they have Strava and all this kind of thing, and they... The one for me is the number of coaches you'll see, like, probably not proper coaches, but, like, you know, you're...
What's not a proper coach? Let's classify a coach.
Okay, hang on, sorry.
Coach.
Yeah, so, like, what I'd say is not a club-focused or a performance-focused coach. So someone who is... There's a load of them out there now. So it's great. People are helping each other with running and that sort of thing. And that's perfect. I'm not doing these guys down, but you see a lot
basically
of this...
they're cowboys. Yeah.
No. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying there's a lot of stuff like things get jumped upon. Like there was that thing about, they love numbers. So power meters, you know, these things, Stride, I've never used it myself, but there's a lot of stuff out there, like mileage targets, all gets a bit too much for me. But the one I think is the weirdest one is the cadence. So as a simple tool, maybe for guys that are new to running and perhaps guys that could do a bit of work on their technique, lifting your cadence is important. But the act of lifting your cadence is
cadence
enough.
Cadence is pace.
Yeah. Well, yeah, turnover of steps.
Yeah.
Right. But there was one thing. Well, there's one study, right? That there was one that's study.
That's not going to help you run faster.
To a certain extent, it will.
People have got a crazy cadence, but they don't go nowhere.
But some people overstride massively, like not necessarily runners, but like some people that are new to running, like would, without the knowledge of how to run, would tend to run with quite a long stride, right? A lopey stride. And if they actually shortened their stride and sped up there, you know, had a faster turnover, they would get faster, right? But the problem is, what happens is people take these numbers. So one number we saw this data was from, they did a study at the Boston Marathon, right? All the elite runners in the whole entire field. And they found out that there was an average of 180 steps per minute, an average, right? But there was a range of about 120 to 224. So a ridiculous range. But however, this number 180 has been picked up. And if you ever hear a coach saying you should be running with 180 steps per minute,
but that's kind of rubbish, because they're all different sizes as well in terms of height.
Exactly.
Which makes a massive difference.
It is ridiculous. So data gets pulled upon and is not real world. Can't be applied in the real world. So that's a perfect example. And all these, I think if you were at the very top of your game, things like, I don't know, power meters and that sort of thing, particularly if you're doing maybe 800 or whatever else, they might make a difference, 400 maybe. But I think for most of us, we're all endurance runners, a lot of this data is absolutely useless, I think. And it's just...
So what data would you think's essential to know?
Race results.
And that's it?
I'm just joking. I think subjective data is important. So it is important to see mainly like how you feel it. Because tempo running is a difficult one. Like you brought that up a lot, but it's difficult because actually, like, if you're feeling absolutely amazing and clipping along at, I don't know, 340 per K, and then one day you're really gassing to try and hit 340 per K, that's interesting in data to me. Do you know what I mean? Alongside your...
Well, if you had blood data, where if you did little regular checks and stuff, knowing, say, you know, like, if your iron's low and things like that, then you could put that next to your running data, and then you know why you had good sessions and when you had bad sessions, because obviously, if, you know, like if your sugars after a race, obviously, your, you know, the glucose is really low and things like that.
Yeah. It would be useful. And we'll talk more to Hamish about it in a minute. Obviously, he's trying to make that process easier. So he's trying to make home testing simple. And, you know, it's the start for them. They're going to grow and they're going to try and make it more applicable to you. So yeah, it could be. And I think the importance is, which is subjective data is really important on top of that data. I think data's gone too far.
Not too much stuff, but yeah, you know, like selective stuff, it could work.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, at all levels, like pro and, you know, like park runner.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's go to chat to Hamish, see what he has to say about Thriver and what they are doing and their kind of ethos. So we'll chat to him. Here we go. Hello, listeners. I forgot to mention on the recording, Thriver are offering our listeners a bit of a deal. So if you fancy either baseline or an advanced test, have a look on the website, thriver.co. Yeah, you get £25 off. So if you use the code GETRUNNING25. So if you're interested in doing that, have a look. But here's Hamish now. We are sitting here in a meeting room at Thriver's office with Hamish Grierson. How are you doing, Hamish?
I'm doing really well. Yeah, thanks for having me, Sean.
Good stuff. And we had to talk a bit about Thriver and what they're doing. Obviously, I'm now a Thriver user, so we can talk about my experience. But can you give us a bit of background on how you set up Thriver originally?
Yeah, for sure. So Thriver is co-founded by three of us, myself, Elliot and Tom. And Elliot and I used to work together at a previous company. And I suppose it was really the coming together of Elliot's existing blood testing need. So he used to get a regular blood test for a health condition that he has, where he has to track his cholesterol levels. I guess what you could generally think about as proactive health, you know, how much control you can have over how you feel and how much energy you carry with relatively sort of minor shifts to your lifestyle. And that started out for me with kind of paleo dieting and some of the kind of basic movement and exercise regimes. I guess they probably morphed into something that's HIIT or CrossFit-esque. And yeah, bringing those two things together, we started down a path discussing really why the health system was set up the way that it was, where we've got an amazing set of abilities to fix people when they get sick. But when we think about ourselves when we're not sick, we have so little insight, really, that is clinical and credible to help us understand ourselves. It just seemed really backwards. And when we look forwards as to how things are likely to progress, I think we're going to look back in 5 years' time at how little information we had about ourselves versus how much information we have about the world around us. And that asymmetry will start to be nullified. I think we're going to know a lot more about ourselves. Yeah, that's the future we're trying to build towards.
So what was the original idea? How are you going to try and start moving in this direction?
I guess there have been sort of two parts to the Thriver story so far. The first part was we sort of said to ourselves, well, is the technology there to be able to let people get some really credible insight about what's happening inside their bodies and really easily? So there's a couple of kind of parts to ease, cost, convenience, and credibility. So up until relatively recently, the idea of doing a finger prick blood test at home and being able to run a pretty broad suite of biomarker analysis on that sample just wasn't there. So the guys who actually developed the analyzer platforms that go into the central laboratories have gotten better and better over time. So actually now we do have the ability to run, as you have experienced, a pretty broad broad set of analyses on a quite small sample. So the technology was suddenly there. Part one of our story was all about ease and access. What happens when you make it really easy for people to get access to this home testing kit and present data back in a way that is really easy to understand and very clear for them as to what it means for them individually. So what can I do about it? What is the next step here? So it was all about access. And what we learned by doing kind of part one of the roadmap was the critical thing for people in the vast, vast majority is trying to move away from this idea of sort of general health insights to really personalized health insights. So when we started, we had, and we still do, NHS-trained GPs doing a review of all of the results, and they sort of comment on any abnormalities that either were serious or weren't serious in the context of your results and your health information. And we had sort of nice guideline-derived insights in the dashboards. And those are fantastic because they have nice, if you like, as a grounding factor to come to a level of credibility. But people wanted to know more about the individual biomarkers that were relevant for them and wanted to see what the latest research was about those particular areas, because most of our customers had sort of leveled themselves up in terms of understanding some stuff and looking at the very latest research. And so part two of what Thriver has been all about is making it much more personalized. So today, while you can choose one of a set of, if you like, sort of pre-packaged tests, so essential, baseline, or advanced, we also have created an ability for people to answer some really basic questions about what is important to them. And we have a set of algorithms that say, okay, actually for you, Sean, the things that matter are A, B, C, D. And when you then get a set of results, the algorithm can help you understand what you might want to then look at as a consequence of what we've seen in the information. So yeah, access part one, personalization part two.
For on a really basic level, for people who haven't heard of the system or what you guys are doing, what happens? What is the product in a sense?
Yeah, I probably should have started that by covering that off. Good point, I think, Sean. So you go to thriver.co, thriva.co, and you order an online test. As I say, you either choose something that's been prepackaged or you go through a little questionnaire and we'll show you what we'd suggest based on your health focus or health goals. We then send you a kit in the post, and in that kit there's everything that you need to collect a little finger prick blood test yourself. It's a tiny little lancet blade, you know, like a, it's just like a pinprick test.
Yeah.
You collect about 15 droplets of blood into one tube or two little tiny tubes, and you post them directly back to one of our partner laboratories. It's free post, it goes in any kind of Royal Mail letterbox. And the labs that you're sending it to are the same labs that would deal with NHS samples. So it's all running on the same underlying architecture or sort of system technology.
Hmm.
And the central labs then process the samples. Hmm. And we then get the raw form of the data back to our platform. And you as a customer, usually within 48 hours of doing your test, often faster, get an online result that's been reviewed and commented on by one of our NHS trained GPs, and a really easy to read dashboard that says, okay, you know, if it's not your first test, how am I tracking over time? You can see not just your result and whether you're in the standard lab range, but you can see whether you're in the optimal range with our dashboards as well. We try and expose you to what that particular thing actually is. So what is HbA1c? It's a marker for diabetes and pre-diabetes. What does it do in your body? How can you positively impact it? What are some of the associated biomarkers you might want to look at if you're also looking at HbA1c? So we are trying really hard to take a pretty complicated blood test and make it really simple for people to understand it, both in terms of why it's worth testing and what the information means when you get it.
Okay. So if that means, I hear a lot about, sort of a lot of elite athletes would often talk about how often they'll test their blood and that sort of thing. So why do you think it's important for me as a runner, not at a level, but, you know, I'm running hard, why was it important for me to go through a test like this, do you think?
The thing that we found most shocking, that most people in the UK, though lots of other countries besides, they just don't get any form of regular insight as to what's happening inside their bodies, period. We have an NHS over 45s check, but national take-up rates are 17-ish percent. So even there, you tend not to see people getting those insights, though they're encouraged to. And what that means is, even at a very basic level, so are you, as a an individual focused on your athletic performance, are there any biomarkers relevant to performance, be that you know, iron profile or vitamin and mineral levels or even hormones, you know, very basic hormones? We have people coming to us all the time with a focus on physical performance of some kind, be that weightlifting or running or actually triathletes as well. And we're astonished that they don't get any testing at all.
Mm.
And yet they dedicate, I mean, you know, 20 plus hours a week to their particular discipline.
Mm.
There was one story where we discovered that a Olympic level indoor ice skater was having some performance issues, and it turned out that even at the Olympic level they were getting no blood testing done, and she was vitamin D deficient because she spent the entire time inside a building, because of course that's where you need to be if you're an indoor ice skater.
Yeah.
So just at its most basic, getting a check-in on whether some of the core areas of your internal health are where they need to be.
Mm.
Now, there are some extreme cases where we had a 28-year-old who was a good friend of ours, actually just, it was a friend of Elliot's, did a blood test and revealed actually relatively extreme cholesterol, because he actually has the same condition that Elliot had. He just had no idea, because somehow it had just not gotten passed down to him in information from his folks. So, you know, when you learn something about what's happening inside your body for the first time, there's an amazing amount that can be revealed. If you're training really hard, it's unlikely that you've got a cholesterol problem, probably, but it's just the kind of stuff that you just don't know until you start. So, yeah, as I say, there are some specific biomarkers that are relevant for performance, but there are also just general things that are, I think, important for all of us to keep a track of. So I say, we find it kind of crazy that people just don't know this stuff. And that's why we're trying to do what we do.
And I certainly have never... I've never done it. I never thought about it. Even though I know we always try and mirror the approaches of those at the very top of our desired tree, let's say. And I know that the top athletes regularly have their blood tested, but yet it's not something I can't be bothered to go to a wait in a GP surgery. I don't necessarily know what I really wanted. I mean, GP can't be trained in every single area, so they wouldn't necessarily know that I'm into performance, and it just feels like such a trudge to go and do that.
As a business, people often think that we're somehow anti-NHS, and it's the absolute antithesis of that. You know, the NHS system was designed to provide something, as you rightly described, it was just a long way away from that need, that sort of customer use case. You know, the GP is not there to help you improve your marathon time, right? No. That's just not what they were designed for.
No.
What we recognize is that just because you might be interested in that area and some of the associated areas of just sort of generally improved health as well as my performance, why wouldn't you have access to that kind of information? It needs to be credible and something that you know what to do with, so it's delivered responsibly. It doesn't cost £1 million. It just feels like it's, you know, people have a right to that information. And it just isn't something that I think is reasonable to expect our national healthcare services to deliver.
So for me now, I've done the first test. I actually had an email this morning telling me my results. So I'm going to go and check this a bit later. But how would I use Thriver in that initial situation, and then how would I work with, I guess you said you have long term relationships and certainly you can monitor levels, how does that work in practice?
So I think something that isn't sort of immediately obvious about Thriver, but we're certainly working to try and make it more obvious, is that as a business our ambition is to help you build up a long term picture of the areas of your health that matter to you specifically. So you sort of inherently start with a first test, and that gives you your sort of first snapshot at a point in time. But what we've set out to create is a tracking product. So you can control when the next test arrives. You can make it as soon as a month or as far out as 12 months. It's entirely up to you. And everything that you see in the way that we present information back is graphed to show you how your individual numbers are moving over time. So two things I think are important there. One, you and I might do exactly the same test and both come out with exactly the same set of results on the first test and possibly on the second. But then I take a lifestyle intervention of some kind, or you change your training routine of some kind, and that has an impact that shows up in the testing that you're doing. What matters is your personal indication, right? So how do your individual trend lines move over time? And, you know, we have a really clear understanding of how the dashboard on your car is only useful for your car, right? And you know, back in the, you know, when cars were slightly more randomized in the way they're produced, you got to know your car. My car can tolerate running at 105 degrees oil temperature, but the other guy's car can only tolerate running at 90 degrees. Or I actually know that my fuel gauge goes quite far below the minimum line, and some other guys it doesn't quite go that low. So you just get to know the idea of what matters to you individually. And yet for our bodies, this idea of, you know, the generic truth for me is whatever it is. I think people are slowly waking up to the fact it's just absolute nonsense. So we have to help people build up a view of what specifically matters to them. So as I say, there's the regularity, that's one part. The second part is actually what you're testing.
Mm.
So to give you an indication of how people sometimes use us today, you know, we've got people who in the fitness industry, you know, they'll be doing or maybe athletics uses as opposed to personal trainers.
Mm.
When they are really increasing their load, so starting to train much more heavily, they'll introduce something like a C-reactive protein marker, which is an indicator for inflammation.
Mm.
And that's a really good indicator that your, you know, your health is kind of in check, and there's nothing untoward happening. If you're overtraining, you might well start to see CRP moving. Now, there are other things that can move CRP as well. If you've got an infection of some kind, it would start very likely starting to elevate your C-reactive protein. Conversely, if you're spending a load of time outside in a climate that, frankly, is a bit hotter than we tend to get in the UK, you probably don't need to worry too much about your vitamin D levels. And therefore, you might want to take that out. And we see people customize their testing because they know that something isn't as relevant. And the thing for us, we don't want you to pay for a test unless you need it, unless it's relevant for you. So test by test, you can tweak what's in the mix of things that you're testing for.
Okay.
As I say, part of that is just making it personalized and relevant to you. And part of it is recognizing that, you know, cost is a reality. Forgive the barking dog. And we see that as a necessary way to help people kind of stick with it.
Yeah. And would you know what sort of things runners tend to look for? What's typical in terms of an athlete's?
Yeah, so I think there certainly are a few commonalities, one of which is just the sort of basic vitamin and mineral profile, so the vitamin Ds, the B12s. You know, we do see athletes who are training and not supplementing, especially if they're training really hard, they can end up with some B12 level issues. And again, it's a really basic test, and it's, you know, relatively straightforward to address. Equally, we see people looking at the associated markers for oxygen carrying. You know, maybe unsurprisingly, if your you know, your folate levels are not where they need to be, then it might all have an impact on the way you perform. In the winter, we see people looking at vitamin D in particular, because if you haven't got much sunlight in your life, that can be a problem. Ironically, runners who run in the gym tend to increase the likelihood of them having a vitamin D issue. Ironically, of course, the other way around, if you're a runner and you're outside the whole time, relative to the average bod who sits in the office the entire time, you know, might be all right. Probably depends on what clothes you're wearing and how covered up you are. And then sort of on the shoulder of some of those core requirements, you've got things like cholesterol, which people tend to keep track of sometimes because they've started running and they want to see how much of an impact that's starting to have positively or not on their cholesterol, which is impacted by exercise. You see people, again, sort of on the shoulder, looking at specific areas around testosterone and thyroid function. You know, if for whatever reason testosterone output isn't actually, you know, where you would hope it would be given your age, that can have an impact. And it tends to not be something that's specific to people who are interested in their fitness, but, you know, thyroid function, hormone function, you see it a lot.
Yeah.
And if it isn't where you want it to be, then that can have a fairly meaningful impact on a number of elements of your health, including energy and endurance. And we got introduced to, in fact, he contacted us, Dylan Hartley, the ex England rugby captain, was quite open about the fact that they get tested for doping, essentially, at the international level of rugby. And that's kind of it.
Right. Yeah.
And I look at that and I think, crikey, if even at the cutting edge of some sports, you don't have just a sort of routine set of processes around, let's just understand what's happening that might be invisible but is easy to understand, actually.
Yeah.
You know, we as a country are sitting on a huge personal opportunity, right? Yeah. So individually, we want to be getting more out of our bodies and living for a happier, longer lives.
Yeah.
And I think that has to, well, I mean, our view is we believe that has to start with empowering people with the right data.
Yeah.
I don't know if you read recently, so this is getting slightly off topic on the athlete side, but actually it's probably related. For the first time, life expectancy has slightly declined in the UK.
Right, okay.
So we have, you know, depending on who you ask, done a relatively good job as a society at elongating how long we live.
Yeah.
The recent data wouldn't suggest that's quite going the way we wanted to. But we haven't been elongating what you might describe as health span or well span, so the proportion of life that we live well. So right. We might be living longer, but we live more of it with disease.
Yeah.
And when we think about what appears to be the big gap, we've known for 100 years that we should exercise and eat well and not drink a load of alcohol and yeah. just do the basic. And we have somehow, as human beings, as a consequence of our wiring, managed to come adrift from that in a fairly meaningful way. And what we hope is that by showing people that, yes, there is this blood testing tool, but no, it's not like blood testing as you probably know it. There's a really exciting sort of frontier, and it's inside you.
Yeah.
And letting people get to grips with that and helping connect them with their bodies in a way that they just haven't been able to before, you know, maybe we can start changing the tide there.
Yeah.
And at the far edge of the axis, there's, you know, improved performance and making sure that you're actually doing the right stuff to get the most out of your body.
Yeah.
And at the other end, it's probably preventing people from getting into those disease states in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a pretty broad mission.
Yeah. It's interesting really because as runners, we always, you know, we're all linked to Strava and we love data and we love looking back at stats about certain things. But a lot of time we don't, I guess with the training, we often, those that aren't at the top level don't, they have a generic plan that they'll follow that the same as everybody else. And this, well, in a number of different ways, the trend is towards personalization, and it's particularly at the top of level. So it's how do you see the future? Do you see, and you're part of it, how do you see it moving?
Yeah, so let me give you an example of just a sort of a snapshot glimpse of a relatively near-term future. But if you just kind of work backwards from some of the stuff that has to happen, actually, you know, it's all quite exciting. Rollover, phone pings you, not too early to wake you up. Hey, Sean, it's Thriver. We noticed that you slept badly for the fourth time in a row. We probably have sucked up your Garmin data or your Fitbit data, whatever is appropriate, maybe your smart mattress data.
Yeah.
Did you know that fatigue negatively impacts vitamin D synthesis? And our data shows us that people like you, so we're doing some sensible use of anonymized data, if you've been supplementing with your, whatever, 2,500 IU vitamin D supplements, which is the amount that's geared to your requirement, should be back within the optimal range, given that you're a marathon runner, within the next 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
That feels like sci-fi relative to, hey, take this generic supplement because you should.
Yeah.
Right? I don't have a problem with David Gandy, but there's a reason that Vitabiotics use David Gandy on the face of the advertising. Because what they can't do is say, here is concrete proof that when you put this pill in your mouth, it's going to have a consequence that is tied to your goals.
Yeah.
And our view of the future is, and you said the word already, it's going to feel personalized. If you imagine, at a really top level, I take an action.
Yeah.
I change the way that I eat or how much sleep I get or how much time I feel stressed or whether I'm meditating or whether I'm training 10 hours in this way or 5 hours in that way. You take an action and then you'll be able to connect it to what it is doing to you as an individual.
Yeah.
Is it positively impacting your performance? Is it positively impacting the chances of you having a baby?
Yeah.
Is it positively impacting how you carry risk for disease? Is it impacting how you sleep? Is it impacting how much of the time you spend in a better mood. So it's that idea that you'll do stuff, whatever the things might be, but you'll start to connect it with the outputs.
Okay.
And our job as Thriver is to help you see the value of that today.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm concerned I shouldn't keep you too much longer.
Not at all. That's been a pleasure.
Some questions now we ask everybody. Before that, I read something about the giant fat bug. And I have to ask, what was that about?
Yeah, so there are two advertising campaigns that we usually get asked about. That's one of them.
Yeah.
I'll let you research what the other one was.
Okay, all right.
So yeah, we wanted to help people to start thinking about internal health as well as external sort of bodily forms of health. Mm. So not just how do I look on the outside, but what's happening inside. And the way that we chose to try and sort of articulate that to the masses was we built a giant fatberg and put it on the bank of the Thames. really just to sort of help people visualize how much additional fat, and we had to do the calculations very carefully, but how much additional fat was put on or sort of accrued by the nation over the course of the Christmas period.
Oh, really?
it was deliberately relatively sort of shock and awe.
Yeah.
It was also the day that we put it on the bank of the Thames. It was incredibly cold.
Oh, really?
a load of Thriver employees, including myself, shivering next to a giant fat bag. Yeah. Things that you never thought you'd find yourself doing when you start a business.
Yeah, yeah. Creative ways to spend your day.
Yeah, yeah. Unusual. Yeah. Haven't done it since.
Yeah, yeah. And then the quick five questions we had were, the first one is, if you could be anywhere running now, and we spoke a bit off air about your running in Bath.
Yeah.
If you could be anywhere running now, where would it be?
So I got back into running recently, as I was saying, and the place that I got back into it was in the Hebrides. So I was really lucky. My family and I went up to the Hebrides, inner and outer Hebrides, for 2.5 weeks and ran around the islands there a bunch.
Nice.
And there was one run in particular, it was a trail run. And it was, just blow your head. It was, the turquoise water was the colour that you get in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
The beach was 5 miles long and there was not an individual on it.
Wow.
And other than getting dive bombed by some quite aggressive birds, it was, just amazing. Yeah, really cool.
Yeah, excellent. Second question is, can you recommend us anything? So it's a bit of a wide ranging question. Anything, book, film, TV show, to like an experience? The Outer Hebrides sounds like a good one, but
yeah, I would definitely give the Outer Hebrides a good rep. I recommend the book actually that I've just finished. For any sort of business or entrepreneurial folks out there, it's called Play Bigger, and it's all about essentially category design.
Hmm.
And we've always wrestled with the fact that we're not making it, a slightly faster pizza or a slightly better cab. You know, people just aren't doing what we're letting them do today.
Yeah.
So we are creating a category.
Yeah.
So it just struck a real chord with me. And I thought it was super interesting.
Okay. We'll put a link to that one. Play Bigger by?
It's a trio of authors and then written by a fourth guy as well.
Okay.
Al, Dave, Kevin, and I can't remember the other guy. Sorry,
we'll put a link anyway.
Sorry, fourth author.
Yeah. We'll put a link so people can find it out. And the final question is: what, in your opinion, is the most inspiring endurance performance of all time?
So, although it didn't end the way that I think she would have liked it to, Susie Goodall, first. British female yachtswoman. She took on the, I think it's the, what's the name of the race? It's like the Golden Globe race or something like that.
Yeah.
And just the idea of taking on the Atlantic and a number of other big oceans by yourself.
Yeah.
Just sounds absolutely bananas.
Yeah.
And she ended up in some outrageous storm and her boat literally ended up doing a forwards roll. I mean, how big the waves must be to get a yacht to do a forwards roll, I don't know. Thankfully she survived and I'm sure she'll be on to other great things. And she's, you know, 29, 30 years old or something. And
yeah,
wow. Just super, super impressive.
Yeah. There was, I remember for a while, I'd read about sort of the youngest people to do sort of crazy sailings. They'd all be Dutch. I don't know what it is about the Dutch people just letting their kids, they'd be fine. Send them off across the ocean, they'll be all right.
They can walk now. Yeah. Seems like it's a good time for the Atlantic crossing.
So I'm living in a good place to let my daughter go and do some crazy stuff, but maybe I'll have my English reticence will hold me back or something from that.
Yeah, I'm certainly not letting my boys go anywhere near a yacht for some time.
But a good one. It's the first mention. We have had a mention what do we have? Someone similar, but that's the first mention of Susie Goodall.
She's I think she's super impressive.
Yeah.
Super impressive. And from Cornwall. So good on her.
Yeah. Great stuff. Well, great chatting. I'm looking forward to checking my results out later on and seeing how they
let us know how you get on.
We'll do.
Nice. Cool. Thanks. Cheers. Very much.
So nice news there. We haven't done a news because we're moving the news section to now. And there's two bits of news, three bits of news. And I'll give you
three bits? How many three bits?
Shall I do it like in the news at 10? Ready?
Okay. Have you got the dongle? Have you got the dingle?
I have to go, bong, news item number one. The women's mile world record went this week in the Diamond League. And it was...
Yeah, Hassan.
Oh, man, she's running so good. She's really funny because she looks... that her style isn't really... It looks like almost like she's a child that's just learned to run. It's all a bit all over the place, but she's so good.
Like a baby giraffe.
It's a bit all over. It's better now with Salazar, but still, it's pretty crazy.
See, it was all good until you said that word, Salazar.
Yeah.
She's like, Hassan's so a good runner, yeah. But Salazar is... It basically, he's disappeared since there was that big drug scandal and him and Mo, and obviously Mo had to leave him.
Yeah.
And then he's been quiet, and all of a sudden, Hassan goes to him, she's broken the world record.
Yeah. And Kajelch is running pretty strong too. I mean, I didn't see him this week, but...
I'm not saying nothing, but hashtag dodgy. You know, alarm bell. It's all right. Alarm bells are ringing. You know?
She's Dutch, I've got to support her. She's from my adopted country, so I've got to support Hassan. But the other interesting person in that race was Laura Whiteman. Do you see? She's second place in like 4:17. She smashed her PB. So that was quite interesting. She's really, really come into form. So we've got two really good British women now in their 1500 metres for women.
It's going to be tasty.
And also, the other...
And what about bong? What about Charlie Christ?
Well, that second bong. I've still got to do bong 0.5, which is also... Laura Whiteman, she's running well, but also we had the European under 23s, Gemma Riki, and she won the double under 23 European. She won 800 and 1500 meters. So we got
that's really good going.
Yeah, that's really amazing. So we've got a strong, strong future with Laura Muir, Laura Whiteman, and obviously with Gemma coming through. So that's quite good. That's bong 0.5. Then we'll go bong. The Brighton, Brighton Phoenix, the Brighton Phoenix. Record, club record, 1500 metres has gone. And it's gone to Charlie Grice because he beat Steve Evett's record to go fourth from the all-time list. Wow, that was amazing. Did you see it?
I was surprised because I didn't know he added that in him.
Yeah.
Charlie Grice is a good runner, but wow. Yeah. Obviously, that's next level now.
Yeah.
So that was a big surprise. But that blimmin', is it Monaco Grand Prix?
Yeah. So
I'm fast. Sure, like so many people got. That's where Mo got the British record.
Oh, was it?
It's like, yeah, it's like that is the fastest 1500 meter race every year, usually.
Yeah. Okay. But he was third, wasn't he? He came in third place.
He came high up. It's always fast.
Yeah.
That race. It's just always. It's like literally you run single file, get towed, perfect conditions. You just need to be fit enough.
Yeah. Well, he obviously is fourth fastest ever in the UK. Imagine that. That's pretty impressive. So nice work to him. Crazy. Nice work to Charlie for doing that. That was bong two. We've only got one more bong to go though. So I'll do it now.
Go on in.
Bong.
Matt. We want the real sound. We don't want that crusty, that yeah, Sean yeah. sound. We don't want that devil sound.
Well, this is just more of a joke bong, because the final bit of news is man runs 100K, goes the wrong way, gets disqualified, makes national news. Did you see this? I feel sorry. It's ex interviewee Tom Fairbrother, right? So Tom Fairbrother runs the Race to the Stones Ultra 100K. He's winning by about half an hour. So he's won this race, all ends up. He comes to a junction. He goes the wrong way. He manages to get back on course. He's gone an extra mile, right? So, and he still wins, right? And then the race organizers give him the trophy. They say, oh, everything's fine. You won. He did an interview. And then all of a sudden they said, no, you're disqualified, actually. You should have known which route to take. But
it's not orienteering where they need to know go the right way.
No, but why I'm thinking this is news is I think, why the hell is this news? It was in the Daily Telegraph. It's been in a lot of other publications. I'm sure Tom doesn't want this to be on Daily Telegraph or whatever else. Like, it's just like he went. It's just a race. He went the wrong way. I don't think he's got a big prize money for it. It doesn't really matter to him, I don't imagine. But yeah, it's really funny. It's funny. It's
crazy. Have you ever been the wrong way in a race?
Yeah, plenty of times. Yeah, I'm just thinking about it then. Plenty of times.
Like, and it's so annoying.
Yeah,
it is. Because, so annoying.
Yeah.
Like, you think all the extra effort you've wasted could have been going the right way.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you mentally, you're so mad and angry. Yeah. The race is usually done. Like, you've blown your race after that because you're just so angry.
I've won two races when I'm going the wrong way, I think. Yeah, I won on that last mountain race. I went the wrong way a little bit, not very far, to be honest. And then the last marathon race I won, I went the wrong way a bit. So yeah. Oh no, my best one was in. I think I spoke about this last week in Spain. Did we talk about this? When I went the wrong way, when we were in the middle of nowhere in Spain, I was doing this 10K around Christmas time. I thought I'd do it. And it was a real nightmare actually, because it was nowhere near Madrid, and my wife was a bit upset about having to go that far. But the lead bike went the wrong way, so I just followed it. And I went round and I ran 32K rather, no, sorry, 12K rather than 10K. But there was people going apeshit, I promise, these Spanish guys were going absolutely apeshit. They were throwing stuff. And Molly thought that it was because they'd been beaten by an Englishman and they were all like, big nice. she was going to book a taxi to get us the hell out of there, because she thought we were going to be linked.
She was like, yeah, he's not with me. He's not with me. Yeah, yeah.
But fortunately, they were going mad at the police driver. So it was nearly a riot. You've never seen like little runners with their skinny little arms causing a fuss. But over in Spain, I saw that. Yeah, so that was good. So yeah, that's the news in a new way. Yeah, hope you enjoyed it. But yeah,
so what are you doing this weekend?
I'm urging people to send us more reviews. We need more reviews. Keep doing it. We need them. I'm also urging people to join our podcast mailing list. Hannah Viner, formerly of Less Bike Fanzine, she is producing a great summary of the week's news in articles and various stuff. So you don't have to go and trawl through Runner's World, whatever else, to find good articles. Just join our mailing list every Friday. Hannah pings you an email with all that detail on it. You can have a little read while you eat your cornflakes at work, whatever you do. After your run, it's perfect. Do it. Get on our site, letsgetrun.co.uk/podcast/podcast. There'll be a chance there to sign up. Oh, hang on. Before I go anywhere, we had another donation. And I think it was by Ashley King. Let me just have a look.
Thank you.
Yeah, Ashley King bought us an espresso each. So thanks for that.
We're saving a little pot of gold.
Me and you're going to go for a party. We're going to have Ibiza or something. Save it all up.
We'll take 1 year retirement once it's big enough.
Yeah. But thank you for that. That's very kind of you to make a donation. And yeah, that's really, really nice. Nice one. I think that's it. What are you up to?
What?
Are you playing football? Where you?
Nah, look, nah, I'm going Europeans under 20s, Gothenburg.
Ah, nice, nice.
But more importantly, apparently I'm assistant coach,
right?
Because my friend is coach, and he's made me his assistant coach. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
So my friend Dave Reagan.
Yeah.
The guy gets beaten by pencil. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he goes to me, oh, so the he's or our athlete, he's athlete.
Yeah.
Is Ben Patterson doing the 800.
Yeah.
And heats are on Friday, finals on Saturday, finals on Sunday. So we've got Saturday off. He goes, why don't we do parkrun in Gothenburg?
Have they got one?
Yeah. And he goes, yes. the record's only 16:04.
Yes.
I said, okay, I'll pace you for the first maybe 2K blow up and you just do the rest.
Yeah. Come on, Jermaine, don't do yourself down. Come on. You can do this. Yeah. That's all right. So, 16:04.
We're doing that. So they obviously, I'll give you update news on Europeans.
Yeah, do it.
At the 20s.
And it's a nice city, Gothenburg. Got a nice old city. And then there's the new city. And there's a nice vegetarian restaurant, Jermaine, halfway up the hill on the, well, on the other side. Yeah.
The only green stuff I eat is green jelly babies. So yeah. we ain't got vegetarian.
Me and my wife enjoyed it very much. Very nice. Yeah. Enjoy. Should be nice. Good stuff. Well, we'll leave everyone to it. We'll speak again next week.
Cool.
All right. Bye-bye.
See ya. Bye.
In a world of 1 million wrestling podcasts, there is a new shining star with great interviews, analysis, music, and me, Matt Kuhn, on Total Engagement. Go to any podcast platform to listen today.